If I knew then what I knew now, I'm pretty sure things would be different. If I'd have known, if only I'd known, I don't know if I would have acted the same way. I don't know if I should have seen him. What he did to me. This is Independent Librarian Dynamics, Sean Kennedy VI, doing a private broadcast of episode number 732.653.663.398.36.14. This private broadcast is in Queen's English from sometime after now. By listening to this broadcast, you should know that you're violating your listener's license. You may be violating any creativity permits, and you may be subject to termination or enforced recycling for the betterment of all. Greater than this, I suppose you run the risk of learning the truth about the world around us. Maybe about the nature of God. It's the kind of thing that would shock or disturb you. Maybe you shouldn't listen. But if you believe that knowledge is power, this will be a tool for you. So light your candles and may server protect us all. I've left New Rome. I put a lot of distance between me and that city. I expected New Rome to change my life. I expected it to give me a new direction, and I suppose I wasn't disappointed. I definitely have that. And I am a librarian. I am one charged with the high crime of sharing data with what the Dread Man gave me, either a gift or a curse. I know that it'll bring me knowledge and therefore strength, but at what cost? At what cost? I traveled to New Rome to see the Dread Man. The Dread Men are, well, they were a legend. I'd heard of them. I may have mentioned them before. They were a project that was an augmentation. They took augmented reality, the ability to, well, overlay computer images on real environments. My helmet or any HUD heads-up display is in essence an augmented reality, something that would outline a shape. That's, you're seeing it and you're seeing the outline, so therefore it has augmented your reality. That's at the most basic level. When we get to the kind of levels that the Dread Men are at, where they've got it, scanners and everything electronic around them, everything that emits any kind of signal is picked up by the Dread Men by implants that they have inside of their heads. And it awakens a sense within them that maybe man was not meant to have. Most Dread Men go insane. Most Dread Men never become that. They have the surgery and it twists them. They kill themselves because of the noise, especially even today. Maybe if you were in deep wastelands, the signals wouldn't reach you, but they're always there, silently shifting through the air, lurking just beyond your spectrum. When you're a dread man, you can see these freaks. Your brain takes them and transforms them into shapes. Invisible gigahertz signals suddenly become faces, smoke shifting. Television signals broadcast through the air become images and clouds. Your brain takes it and tries to modify everything into something that a human mind can grasp, something it can understand. It's the seventh sense. Technological, psychic. Maybe you're just an abomination, I don't know. The Dreadmen were created by the military as a... Gee, I wonder what this'll do. They were untrainable. Because of the knowledge they gained, being able to see so much, those who didn't kill themselves or tear their own face apart, and madness became like spiritual leaders, prophets channeling signals from the long dead. And I mean, are you even aware of how many signals are floating around you right now? No matter what time you live in, do you know how many frequencies, how many waves are moving around you that you can't see, can't feel, that invade your body and seep through you? Even a person's body has an electromagnetic frequency around it that can be seen, that can be detected, can even be photographed. And as a dread man, you can see that. Lies become obsolete. You can't control what you don't understand. And the dread men have that most dangerous of things. They have understanding of the spectrum beyond man. I approached and entered the city of New Rome that night after the... Well, after my last broadcast, I slept for a while. When I awakened, it was just coming on to the sunset, so I moved down, raced across the wide killing fields, approaching the city of New Rome. They call it the Lost City of New Rome, not because you can't find it. I think they call it that. I understand now, because everyone who's in that city is lost. There's no hope for them. Not only should you abandon hope before you enter New Rome, but you should abandon all civilization, sanity, any concept of self you should probably leave behind. Instead of suicide, there's always New Rome. There's always that place just beyond madness. I approached the front gates. It's a hall, goes through the wall of cars, the twisted metal and headlights. As you got closer, you really appreciated the size of that wall. I mean, it's huge. Because of the nature of the wall, made out of cars, zigzagged and sandbagged together like so many giant steel bricks, you'd think you might be able to climb it, you know, you might be able to scale that, but always hiding in the dark shadows of the gunmen with their cannons pointed out towards the desert. breeding the gases of Bongweed, enhancing their vision and their sight. An unreal calm comes over you when you get close to the place. The essence of Bongweed is everywhere. You feel it as you get close. You take a breath and you can smell its sickly sweet stench. The minute you smell it, it affects you. I had my helmet on, so the filters kept me safe for a while. Until I got to the actual gate. The bars were there. Simple steel gate. I thought the gate was flimsy in comparison to the rest of the wall. I mean, what would be the point of having such a flimsy gate? And inside there was four men wearing pink silk robes with no metal on them at all in this circular tiled steel corridor that led through the 50 some odd feet that was the wall. I thought, how odd, you know, that you'd have this. I mean, it was maybe 10 feet wide, 10 feet tall, this box corridor. Why would you have a stronger defense? I mean, yeah, you've got the gun emplacements, but surely a car could just ram this, make their way through. And I realized what these large circular discs were. They weren't tiles. Along the walls and ceiling and floor were these huge metal discs, 6 feet across, some were 8 feet across. But they weren't metal discs, they were electromagnets, the kinds used for moving scrap, picking up tons of steel at a time. With a flick of a switch, that corridor became a magnetic death trap. If you had any metal on you, even fillings in your teeth, whatever, I mean, it would tear it from your body, pin you to the ground. Any weapons you'd have would crush your hand against the steel. I got about 10 feet away before my danger sensor started to light up on the helmet. They wouldn't open the gate until I took the helmet off. One monk came forward. They looked like the old Shaolin monks. Probably were some type of martial artist. With no metal on them, their hand-to-hand combat was no doubt amazing. He approached the gate, smiling, and said, "Remove your helmet, brother. You have no need for it here." It sounded friendly, but it was... well, there was that thinly veiled threat. And I'll be honest, I was afraid. I mean, I had hardened circuits, and there was a lot of non-metallic alloys, but if they turned that on, I don't know what kind of damage that would do. I've got so many implants that are... That shielding will protect it, but to what level? Nothing shielded was ever designed to be in a chamber like that, not inside of a gateway to digital oblivion. Luckily, by this time I'd figured out how to take the helmet off, so I did. I took it off, and the minute I took it off, the Bongweed hit me so close, right by the corridor, that I took one breath and I felt my whole body relax. The colors of his robe became so bright and so vibrant I could almost taste them. It took me a moment. So pure there. It took me a moment just to get my bearings, realize where I was and what I was doing. You could see the effect on me. I looked down on my legs, steel legs, and I could see metal shifting subtly under my gaze. I took a step forward, and he says, "Now, who are you, and why do you wish to come here?" And even though I was probably more human than I'd been in a while, I sounded like a robot. I said, "I'm Independent Dynamic Librarian. Sean Kennedy VI, and I'm here seeking audience with the Dread Man. And like he'd heard that amount a million times before, the monk nodded his head and smiling, and said, I see. We shall tell him you are here. Come through. The gates opened, and I felt fear race through my body as I took a step across those massive metal discs. Someone would have to just touch an unseen button, and I would be utterly destroyed. The synthetics that had become part of my life would become the rending claws and bullets that would destroy me. With my helmet off, and through the magnetic chamber, I walked into the courtyard just beyond the wall. My implants, away from the magnetic field, picked up an IP address right away, and I was given access to their shared data. It was a propaganda site, an interface that posted the news. I could browse it. All I had to do was close my eyes and I could fire up my monk interface. It was very limited, mostly just text. So I did. And even though it was a simple web interface, I could feel the memories of the routers. The memory of being in the rack. It hurt. But I focused on the news. They had a map of the city there. And on the news site, I noticed that two stories down from the top was that a librarian had entered New Rome seeking the audience with the Dread Man. His name I got from there was named Mr. Weaver. Mr. Weaver. Well, now I have a name. And no doubt with everyone else reading this, it probably wouldn't take me long to locate him. I opened my eyes and I could see that the city around me was the most terrible paradise I'd ever experienced. The influence of the bong weed was flowing through my body, and I miss it even now. That colorful numbing, that method of experience coursing through my veins. I could feel the subtle breath of the city whispering in my ears. I watched the circles of dust dance around people's feet as they walked. Others saw the dust, but were more used to it. Everyone was smiling at me, happy to see me. Stranger walking in from the wastelands. It was like a religion coming of home. It was like paradise. This narcotically influenced home. They could tell I was new and I'd never been here before because of my staring at the dust, at the colors, at the vibrance, at the somehow chaotic art of twisted steel that welded together and made the dwellings that people stayed in. The streets with their subtle beauty. Even the towers where the reigning law, where the new Roman Templars would sit with their high-powered sniping weapons, digitally adjusted fuses, ready to dispense justice at the twitch of a muscle. Even those places looked somehow perfect in their own way. It was proper that they were there. It was perfect. Suddenly I'd forgotten why I'd been there. I forgot why I even came. I stood there for a long time, looking around. A woman came by. Her hair looked like it was made of light. Bright blue light. She took my hand. Just like that. And said, come with me. And I walked. My legs responding, thankfully, because somehow I think that if my legs weren't synthetic, they wouldn't have been able to steer. I would have just been stumbling along the street like some drunken fool. Maybe I was. Maybe that's exactly what I was. Just a drunken idiot. She led me by the hand to a trailer at some point. But the end had been cut away and it was open to the heat. It would have been shielded from the rain, but I could see there was a shower open. Everything was open. There was no barriers. There was a reupholstered seat from what looked like a bus sitting there. She dropped me onto it and I fell into it. It was so soft. I could feel it all around me. Wonderful. It's like it held me. I closed my eyes and just felt the seat take me in. From the IP range I was at, there was music being broadcast, so I allowed it to be played. It was this ambient music, no beat or rhythm to it, just tones carrying me, moving along like a glass stream. It was unbelievable. I took a moment and savored the flavor of the music. I let it roll through my nostrils. I let it bounce around inside of my eyes. It was an experience that I wish I could stay lost in for the rest of eternity. Even if it was a lie. For the first time in my life, I realized the draw of the New Roman Empire. If this wasn't paradise, it was pretty close. I opened my eyes and realized I was sitting on a couch. The girl with the blue light hair had taken her clothes off and she was showering at the end of the trailer. Water would fall through and be gathered in a drain at the bottom, no doubt pumped back into the aqueducts of New Rome. Like a schoolboy, I stood there and stared at her. Her body was beautiful, but not in an erotic way. It was the way the water moved over her. Beads like little serpentine tears running down her tanned flesh. Water splashing, replacing, laughing, cascading around her. It was wonderful. She would see me and her large black pupils like dark pools of light reaching out to me, chased away by the white light of her smile. That time there, on the couch, on that bus seat was... It happened to me within the first few minutes of me arriving in New Rome, but it was an eternity into itself. It was a place where I understood, finally. And that's the only way I could put that. It was an understanding there. It transcended everything else that I'd ever experienced. And even now, I can smell her moist flesh. It's rare to actually have a water shower. There's people who would pay huge credits to just get a crack at something like that. And she said something to me, but her mouth moved too slowly. I didn't keep up to her words. And I shook my head. I realized I was still holding my helmet, and I didn't want to let it go. I knew that something was stopping me from letting go of that helmet. I wouldn't want to lose that here, so I held on to it. I wanted to put it somewhere. I wanted to keep it in something so that I wouldn't lose it. She saw me looking around, and suddenly she was beside me, naked and dripping. The smell of her flesh was unbelievable. Scented like a lotus blossom in a spring wind. She handed me what looked like some kind of a pillowcase with a cord, hemp cord, tied around it, made into a bag. She said, "You can put your artifacts in here." And she handed it to me, but when she handed it to me, it wasn't like giving someone a bag. It was though she handed it to me as though it was some sacred relic, some ancient thing that I'd traveled for thousands of miles to take. It was just this one pillowcase, and she got on her knees and offered it to me. I took it with the same reverence it was given, and I put the helmet inside. I slung the rope over my head and then realized I had a bag around my... and I couldn't remember what I'd put inside of it, so I looked inside, and there was my helmet, which I thought was good, because that way I wouldn't lose it while I was here. And then I got lost in the colors of the couch again. Then there was the color red, this color of red that was washing over me, touching me with warmth, my face. I could feel it moving with the music, with the rhythmless sound of so many voices. I could feel this red warmth licking my body. I realized that the woman with the blue light hair was washing me, my fleshy parts, everywhere where the steel had not touched. She brought the sponge over my head, and I could feel that red warmth of water washing over my face. It was wonderful to feel water on my skin, like I was some newborn child, and this woman, who I didn't even know her name, I still don't know her name, was like a mother and a lover and a wife and a mate and all things in that moment to me. She finished bathing me, and I left my coat, which at some point had left my body, but that stayed in her dwelling, open. Nobody took it. It was bizarre. And I felt strangely calm about it. And then she stood up and took my hand and said, "We will go see him now." And I looked at her with wide eyes and I said, "Who?" And she said, "We will go see Mr. Weaver." And I was going to ask, "Who's Mr. Weaver?" Then I realized that Mr. Weaver was the Dread Man. And that's why I was here. I was here to see the Dread Man. This woman was going to take me to him. She took me by the hand. And gently, beautifully, she glided out into the street. And I glided with her. The smells and sights and the tastes of New Rome were all around me. I was smiling wildly. I was... huge, huge grin on my face, and everyone was smiling back. This really was perfection. This really was the most beautiful place that I'd ever seen. I could see people even with blood running down their face, leaning up against the side of a wrecked car that they lived in. They'd had blood that had dried on them, and a pattern on their face that they probably made themselves using the mirror of the car. It dried there, and look like dustings of red snow on their profiles of their cheeks. And I thought how wonderful it was, how incredible, that you could make dried blood look so attractive on a child. Onwards we glided. Further and further we went. The streets turned back on each other, and I turned around, and we passed the same point 7 times, 8 times, and I thought I saw myself sitting in different people's homes, drinking with them, laughing with them. I would wave to myself, and not wanting to be rude, I would wave back. Eventually we came to a door. It stood alone, away from everything, and behind the door was a corridor that led downwards under the city itself. She opened the door and she said, "You better go inside." And I said, "Is this the way?" And she said to me, she said, "This is one way. It might be yours." And I understood. I said, "Okay." I took a deep breath and I went through the doorway into the dark tunnel, headed down. There's no water drips, no sounds, but my footsteps echoed back and forth and back and forth. Onwards and onwards they went. The echoes came so fast that I wasn't sure how many feet I had. Surely one being with 2 feet couldn't make this much noise. Not this many echoes. So I took more steps. I'd been climbing down for all eternity. Maybe this was all I'd ever done, was just went down steps like this. This is what I do. Who am I? I'm this thing who climbs steps. That's why my legs look like this. But onwards I went, deeper I went, until finally the steps ended. I turned around and I looked back up and I could see it was only about 10 feet from the door to the steps. And I thought, wow, the downward road is a lot longer when you're on it. And then I turned, I walked on down the hall. The hall led to a room which was bright white all around, and everyone around me was wearing white as well. They were about, in memory I'd say between 8 and 10 of them, all standing there wearing white robes, waiting for me. I felt a little awkward. I entered the room and I said hello, and they said hello back. They asked me, "Why are you here?" And for a moment in clarity, things were becoming a little bit more solid. The bongweed was beginning to wear off. I was drifting away in a wave, and I looked around the room, and I could see it was not a waiting room. It was this odd room. There was doors to both the left and the right that had been made, and there was a bed there. A medical gurney with wheels on it. And I said, "I'm here to see." But then the wave came back in again. The bongweed wave came over me, and I stumbled for a moment, and I said, I'm here to see." And suddenly there was 2 people on either side of me. And I remember a man's voice saying, "That's good, because we're here to show you." And then I blacked out, and I was in a sea, a wide ocean, blue as that woman's hair. Maybe it was her hair, maybe I was swimming in an ocean of hair, and I was trying to stay alive, stay afloat. And I felt things slipping away again, I felt things moving inside of me, around me, as though this water was seeping into my pores. I felt it creeping up into my head. I felt it saturate me. I felt it absorbing into my mind. I felt it behind my eyes, itching. I felt it though it would consume me utterly. This water, this strange fluid, this blue light would wash away everything. Maybe it did. And then I came to. I came to, and I was lying on pillows, huge pillows, multicolored, in a room that looked like it was from some history book, a Persian candle-lit harem room that had none of the women there. It was deep colors and rich with strange markings and paisleys and veils, all manner of colors, all lit by candlelight. I say lit, but it wasn't really lit. It was like there was no real light. There was just areas where the shadows parted and shapes revealed themselves. And the smell of the bogweed was so strong here. There's also the smell of wax burning the areas that the candlelight touched. I felt very, very dizzy, woozy. And I realized that my head itched all over, and I didn't know why. Not at the time, I didn't know why. I know now, though. I was in the darkness trying to get my bearings when a voice came to me from where the shadows sat.
They say you won't be speaking with me. You come so very far, come looking. Prophet send, little bird, come fly by way. Speak in me about bookman. Come looking for ways to be bookman. Aya.
At that moment, the darkness parted, and a man came into my view. And this was the Dread Man, Mr. Weaver. He was small and didn't look Jamaican to start with. I thought he might have been maybe Aboriginal or some kind of remote African tribe. He couldn't have been much more than 5'3" or 5'4", but his dreadlocks, huge matted dreadlocks, stretched right down his whole body, and I could see these wires that had been weaved in, one steady wire throughout the whole dreadlock, back and forth, clung to his body, shimmered. His flesh, like wet, held the dreadlocks in place. It sat on his head like some huge spider that ran down his forearm. He walked out of the darkness, and he was wearing the most primitive-looking loincloth, like something an Indian swami would wear from some strange history text. It was this man before me in all of his simple dress with these massive locks of black antenna. It was quite easily believable to be a holy man. His eyes were wide and white, staring at me. He spoke again.
You come all this way. One be finding answers be having. But no answers you be having self. Tell me, bookman, how is it you walk so far, see so much, know so very little?
I said, Mr. Weaver, I've come to... I've come to... And I couldn't think of what to say. I mean, I'd traveled all this way just to speak with this man, to ask him about whether or not what I was doing was right, but suddenly all of these questions sounded so pointless, so stupid. And I felt like a child. I felt like this lost child.
That's fine, Bookman. You come from the outside, looking for things on the inside, and nothing be waiting here. I know why you come, Babylon. I know what you're seeking inside the bogweed. So many things here waiting for you. You want to find rest. No rest for you, Bookman. No rest now. We be taking you along for a little ride time. You be taking others along for the ride. They see so many things through your eyes.
Mr. Weaver moved around me. He sat down just a few feet away from where my metal legs were sprawled out at awkward angles beneath my body. I tried to pull him in as best I could. And I thought, can't this man... I mean, how could he possibly just be so calm about this? I've showed up in his city asking to speak with him, and he's expected me. I didn't understand what was happening. All the while, the bog we sent was so incredibly heavy, I couldn't get away from it. It was just all around me.
Don't ya try speak, Bookman. I know why ya coming here. Ya coming 'cause not knowing which way ya be going on the wind, aya. But I tell you, Bookman, you be going now, be seeking with things that Mr. Weaver give ya. Take the things that take from New Roman Town and go out amongst Babylon. Go see speaking to things long since dead. Keep singing the songs that ya sing. But ya go now to the land of the Dreadman. Ya go now, land of Nod. Ya be seeking X, seeing it there. So many things be learning now. All the tools ya be having, everything ya need, making ya quest come more easily. If only keep walking onwards.
I said, I don't understand what you mean. I'm supposed to go to the land of Nod. I'm supposed to look for X. What do you mean?
There are no answers for you here anymore, Bookman. Only questions. Tis not me giving answers. Only showing ways to see. No speaking now. Bookman, listen what Mr. Weaver say. The server be one true god, always has been, will be there, watching through you and me. We be brothers now. Brothers fighting against things that yet to come. He be speaking through us through the infinite order, things moving around in chaos. We find a random chaos speaking to us now. Cyber Christ come as prophet, first prophet. Now, Mr. Weaver, prophet, Bookman, prophet, all be prophets for the others. We tell them future, so they change in past, but not help us none. The bogweed be giving ya, always helping, seeing things. Bringing adoption help ya deal with gifts that Mr. Weaver be giving ya. Ja be ready, coming to places now. Ja be coming choices. Ja be coming to move next level, be chasing choices. Time to evolve, Bookman. Time to be more than what ya be. Aya.
I was stunned. I didn't know what to say. I was reeling to try to regain my senses, trying to think of what to say. Suddenly, the whole trip had taken on a different tone. I didn't want this. This wasn't right. I just wanted to speak with him about what it meant to be a librarian, what it meant to have these cybernetic enhancements. I didn't mean for all of this to become so confusing, so jumbled somehow. I was struggling for words, and I saw him reach down off to the side underneath some pillows. He produced a long pipe, the kind of carved from the tusk of some long dead animal. He put it in his mouth, and from his fingertips he produced a match. A flame erupted in his hands, and he put it into the end of the pipe and took a long puff on something, whatever was in that pipe. I knew it had to be some kind of bogweed, some pure strain of it. He took a deep breath and leaned forward and blew the smoke into my face. The act of it hitting me, I breathed it in and I felt myself falling backwards, falling, spiraling away down into those pillows that were there to rushed up to greet me. And I heard him somewhere in the distance saying,
"Don't you worry, Mr. Bookman. You and I be talking much more. Seeing ya again. Always be seeing ya."
And again I spiraled out of consciousness. Again I spiraled away into some black void. That sea of blue light was there again, waiting for me. I floated in it, trying to regain my bearings, but the bongweed, which had been so pleasurable before, had now become something else, something like a trap, a sticky web. This blue water, the same color as her hair, had become like tar. I was trapped. I couldn't escape. There's nothing I could do. I was fighting and fighting and fighting and struggling, and eventually my eyes opened and I tore myself into consciousness, and I was back, lying on that couch in that girl's trailer. My shirt was gone, and all my clothing, which I'd worn when I came there, was stacked beside me. I panicked. In a moment of clarity, I checked that pillowcase that the helmet was in, and sure enough, it was there. But I could hear in my own mind a buzzing, a wicked buzzing, a savage sound like so many locusts tearing around inside my mind. It was hard for me to concentrate. I blinked and there was something wrong. There was something wrong inside of my head. And I couldn't figure out what it was. The bongweed was messing with my interface. Something to do with the, maybe how I'd had too much circuitry. Maybe the way that the neural interface with my memory circuits were working. Maybe the ghost wasn't compatible with all of this strange drug that was floating through the air. I didn't know what it was. I tried as best I could to keep focused. I put the helmet back on, and the minute I put the helmet back on, the buzzing dulled. It got to a point where I could think clearly. The buzzing was just fading away now, just an echo somewhere deep inside of me. With the filter in place, the scent of the bogweed, which was everywhere in the city, was starting to fade. I gathered up my clothing, and all I thought of, all I could think of at that moment, was to get out of New Rome. I had to get out of here. I was not going to be a New Roman. And I had to leave before the New Roman Templar saw me. Maybe they thought I was a threat. Maybe they thought it was something. Maybe the insanity of this place would get to me, but I had to escape. So I stood up, made sure I had just about everything, and turned back. I had to find the gates to the city, but I just headed towards the wall. You could see it from anywhere, so I got closer and closer, made it to the entrance from which I came in. I recognized the same monk standing there along the discs of magnets, huge, huge magnets, and he was still smiling as though expecting me. And he said, "Ah, you'll be leaving now." And I said, "Yes, yes, I will." And he goes, "This is for you." And he hands me a satchel. And I'm getting a little bit disturbed now that everyone knows where I am. Everything's so expected here. It's like these people knew I was coming. They knew everything about me. How is that possible that they would know that? This dread man was just a being that had augmentation done. He was a living being. He wasn't a god. This wasn't a holy place. This was a den of drug users. This was something bizarre. There was a darker thing lurking under the veils of paradise here. I took the bag just so that I could keep face. You never refuse a gift here. Not here, especially in... I didn't even know what kind of laws existed in New Rome. Faking a smile, I took the bag and said, "Thank you." He opened the gate. And then I started down the longest walk of my life, back through those discs, those massive electromagnetic plates, that at the flick of someone's wrist could end my life. I honestly didn't know if I'd make it out of there alive. I figured that maybe someone has a sick joke, or... I mean, who know that... Mr. Weaver, the Dread Man, he had to be insane. There was no rational explanation of what had happened there. He said I had to go to the Kingdom of Nod. I had to go find X. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it right then. So, I walked down that corridor. Each step laboringly long. Until finally I reached the outer gate. And the monk at that end opened it up and said, "We'll see you again." I said, "All right then. Take care." And I took to the desert. I got far enough away from the gates of New Rome to not appear suspicious, and then I started to run. And I ran. And I ran as hard as my synthetic legs would carry me, and never before had I ever been so grateful to have an augmentation as I was to have those legs. The pounding of the steel against the dirt felt so good to be free of that place. There was something corrupt there, something dirty. I didn't want to leave it, but I had to, and I had to get enough distance between me and New Rome before I changed my mind and decided to go back. It was the evening of, I thought maybe the following day, when I left the gates of New Rome. I had no way of knowing for sure. I had no idea how much time I'd spent there. The bogweed has taken its toll on me, and I had no idea. I could have been there for 2 days. I could have been there for 2 weeks. I had no idea. I ran and ran until nightfall came, and then I ran until the middle of the night. I was so hungry. I was exhausted. So, without being able to take another step, I sat down out in the middle of the wastelands, away from everything. And that's where I'm sitting now. Same place that I sat. I haven't moved in a few hours. I haven't moved because of what had happened next. See, when I sat down, I wanted to relax, so I took off my helmet. And the helmet was there, but that buzzing came back, that odd buzzing. I could still feel it. It wasn't as loud, but it was there, somehow echoing in my mind. Reaching up, I thought that maybe I'd hit my head, or it was the after effects of the bogweed. When I put my hands up, the tips of my fingers touched the top of my head. And that's when I felt the stitches. Reaching up with my hands, I saw that there'd been an incision made, only about an inch long, at the top of my head. Ran down my... Just the crown of it. And I felt fear rip through my body, and it made sense to me what had happened, what that buzzing was. I grabbed hold of the bag that was given to me at the gates. I opened it up, and inside was a sack of bogweed. It was medicine. He told me that I had to go to the land of Nod. He told me that I had to go look for X. He gave me the ability to see. He'd put in a dread chip. He turned me into a dread man. I don't know when the images are going to start. I don't know when they're going to come, but I know that the shielding in my helmet will keep rogue frequencies from getting at me. If I spend too much time out of the helmet, I don't know what's going to happen. The bogweed must help numb it. I don't know what it's for, but I imagine that would be the reason why he gave it to me, not for trade. I did any research I could on the dread chips, on the dreadmen themselves, from the helmet's database, and sitting here I found out that the history protocols and what had happened was that during the operations, because people were going insane, rather than have it occur all at once, the dread chips would slowly begin to pick up frequencies and introduce them into your cranium over a period of time. So that's what Mr. Weaver had done. That's what he did to me. Over the next, I don't know how long, it's... Well, the dread chip will start to interface with my mind, and I'll be able to see frequencies. On one hand, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, now I'm able to do the things that the Dreadmen could do, but... And yet, I don't know. Maybe that's not what he gave me. I don't know what he put inside my head, but from what he said, it seems to make sense. It seems to be what he would have done. Regardless, I guess I have to go find the Kingdom of Nod, whatever that is. And I have to see if I can locate X. I have no idea where that is or what's or what all that even means. But I guess that remains to be seen. I'll keep my helmet on for the majority of the time. I don't want to risk it with this chip inside of me. Even if that's what it is, I don't know what they put inside my head, but there's something there now. I went there looking for answers, and I guess he gave me one. Maybe it wasn't the one I wanted. I don't know where this is going to wind up taking me, but I'll keep broadcasting. I'll keep sharing it with you for as long as I can, for as long as my sanity stays with me. Until then, this is Independent Librarian Dynamic, Sean Kennedy VI, doing a pirate broadcast of episode number 732.653.663.398.36.14 in Queen's English from some time after now. I hope that my sanity stays with me long enough to teach you what you need to know. I hope that someone out there can make a difference. Please, please help me.